It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new analysis by forecasting firm Oxford Economics says the tourism industry in Wisconsin generated nearly $24 billion in economic impact last year. That's up about $1.5 billion from the previous year. And across the state, a county tracking some of the strongest tourism growth is Outagamie County in east central Wisconsin. So we dig into its situation. Join in by calling with your questions, your comments along the way. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Tom Nelson is Outagamie County Executive. Tom, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yes. So taking a deeper dive here into this report, tourism's economic impact grew by more than 17% in your county from 2021 to 2022. It's among the steepest hikes among counties in our state. What is driving that growth in Outagamie County's tourism?
I think what sets us apart compared to other counties is the diversity within our economy that drives the tourism. So we have, I guess, legacy inputs of what has really stabilized and what's really brought us to this point, which is the Fox River Mall. And despite the fact that trends in retail are going increasingly more e-commerce and online, we still do very well in this area. Second thing is we have the championship center that attracts youth sports and competitions from all over the Midwest. And then we have, the Timber Rattlers, which is a minor league team, a farm team from the Brewers. And so that's attracting a lot of interest from outside the area for 4 months, 5 months out of the year. But then you go into other aspects of the county that are also supporting and driving tourism. So you have the Appleton International Airport, which is an arm of the county, which is one of the county departments, and that is responsible for contributing about $700 million worth of economic activity alone, direct and indirect, just in our community. It supports about 3,000 jobs, plus we have a full slate of projects coming down the pike, including a $100 million expansion of our concourse. We've doubled the number of emplacements, connecting points that we have at our airport over the last 7 to 8 years. We now have 17 destinations. And then we have smaller ones. For example, at the county park system, we have a state-of-the-art pavilion that's coming up that is going to be a major regional attraction for events, celebrations, weddings, and so forth. You also have agriculture that comprises 10% of the overall economy. And in that case, we have things like Breakfast on the Farm, which we had just last weekend. And in that case, you're bringing about 4,000, 5,000 individuals and families out to a rural part of the county to learn more about agriculture and its impact in our community as well as around the state. And So I think overall what you're getting here, the message you're getting, is that it's not just one event or one activity that is anchoring tourism, but a whole breadth of different contributory points that is making a difference here. That's responsible for this incredible growth.
Many different inputs I'm hearing here. Now, you know how they always say you need to really diversify your economy. It sounds like you really are diversifying tourism in that respect and trying to seek it in different areas. When you were mentioning sports, one thing I didn't hear is whether you have any maybe residual tourism being close to Packers country. And I'm just wondering if you do get some of that type of tourism as well.
Yeah, I mean, I probably pegged that number about 10 years ago. The Packers did an economic study that shows that they contribute, they bring about $100 million in a year. And I know that that's a lot larger now. But if they're getting about, I mean, if they're driving about $100 million, Outagamie County is probably picking up about $10 or $20 million.
Okay.
It's at the downtown Paper Valley Hotel in Appleton where the opposing team stays. And so there's a lot of people, you know, when you talk about traveling teams and fans, which, of course, the Packers do very well across the country, when you have those teams come in and they have a fan base that, you know, quote unquote, travels well, they're coming mainly to Appleton, you know, because that's where the players, the coaches, support staff, they stay. So we do get a very significant chunk of those economic dollars. One thing I didn't mention, and I feel really bad about this, is across the street from the Paper Valley Hotel, we have the Performing Arts Center. We just celebrated the 20th anniversary. We consistently get some of the first run off-Broadway shows, even before in the Midwest, even before Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis. We've had two runs of Hamilton, for example. And that, of course, is bringing a lot of people out from within the community. But because these are one-of-the-kind shows throughout the entire state, in some cases the region, in the Midwest, we're getting a lot of people from all over the state and in the region.
Talking tourism with Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson, part of a series of conversations with community leaders around the state, digging deeper into the issues that our state faces. You can join in with your questions, your comments about tourism, 800-642-1234. Do you find, is there aid from the state or federal government that is helping to support tourism in the Fox Valley?
Absolutely. We've had a great relationship with the tourism department. Governor Evers has been a huge advocate for tourism, and he has focused not just in traditional areas, for example, Wisconsin Dells or Door County, but also in other parts of the state that you might not immediately think that this is a serious tourist attraction, which is what we he have here in Outagamie County in the Fox Valley. So on a regular basis, we're taking advantage of grants, support from folks like Governor Evers, from the tourism department, and then also help from our federal legislators, in particular Senator Baldwin, who has been very helpful in this area too.
Do you find that your county has enough infrastructure with hotels and motels and the temporary housing options to meet the needs of both tourists and the workforce?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we certainly have exactly what a size community like ours, as far as lodging, hotels, restaurants, and so forth. But what we do not have available, we have plenty of support in Oshkosh, the Oshkosh area, as well as Green Bay, because from downtown Appleton to Oshkosh is about 20 minutes, up to Green Bay is about 30 minutes. And when you have people who are traveling to different parts of the country, to be able to be 20 minutes or half hour away from a particular event activity they're doing, that's not that far away. And so you can see that we have the capacity when it comes to larger events here, and then vice versa. If there's a Packer game in Green Bay, we're taking a lot of people who are coming to visit and go to those games. And then you have big events like the EAA in Oshkosh. And so all the hotel rooms will be filled up here, up to Green Bay, in some cases, all the way up to Marinette. So you can see how there is this tourism economic ecosystem that is shared among the three major metropolitan areas in Northeast Wisconsin.
Tom Nelson with us, Outagamie County Executive, as we examine tourism and the draw to the Fox Cities region. Join in to discuss what is driving tourism in your area, what you notice. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with community leaders across the state on the most pressing issues, and we focus on the Fox Cities region in east central Wisconsin along the Fox River. Join the discussion along the way. Call in with your questions, your comments for Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson, who's here. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in James in Kimberly. Hi, James. What is your question?
Hi. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for being on here, Tom, to answer some questions. My question is, I know that here in Appleton, we get a lot of really good music that's coming in, you know, to the PAC. I was wondering if Appleton is thinking about utilizing Jones Park more for larger acts coming into Appleton area, kind of like how Oshkosh uses their outdoor venue for like Waterfest, and they bring in way more big time musical acts that are relevant into the Oshkosh area than the PAC is bringing in for shows in there. So I know you guys have started to with like getting Gaelic Storm in there the last couple of years, but I was just wanting to know how that was going to be working out, or if you guys are thinking about that.
James, thank you. And PAC, Fox City's Performing Arts Center. Go ahead, Tom.
Right. And James, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. Doc, I thought of a few things during the break. But what James is talking about, Jones Park, it was a recently renovated park. I know that there are several celebrations there. The annual Juneteenth celebration is there. And that's also right next to the Expo Center, which was constructed 3-4 years ago. And we're attracting, you know, a lot of conventions, a lot of activity. And where you see Jones Park, which is right behind the Paper Valley Hotel, that also leads down to the Fox River, where there's more development going on there. If you look at Appleton, way back when, if you look at the Fox River, there were these tributaries, creeks and so forth, ravines that went out into the city. And of course, a lot that's been filled in, but that's also been a pathway that has brought activity from downtown down to the riverfront. And so Jones Park is in between that. And that is just beginning. I know that that's one of the anchor points for Milo Music, one of the bigger stages. And so we're just beginning to tap into that potential. And James also mentioned, I totally forgot about this, and Dave Williams is going to kill me, Milo Music. So we've had 11 seasons of Milo Music. It is the largest original artist music festival, I think, in the Midwest, and probably one of the top attractions around the country. And that is something that began here in Outagamie County. You have hundreds of acts that cover, well, a mile on College Avenue. That's in the early part of August, and that's right next to Jones Park. And one thing I forgot to mention is, in addition to these larger known events, we also have, in some of these smaller and mid-sized communities, they have their own festivals. I mean, every single community has something going on during the year. James is from Kimberley, so we have Paper Fest there. Across the bridge in my hometown, Little Chute, has Cheese Fest. Up in Seymour, home of the hamburger, where the hamburger was invented, by the way, by resolution from the state assembly, you have the Burger Fest parade. You have the balloon launch, in which there's 3,000 or 4,000 people that show up there. Kaukauna has the Electric City Experience. Black Creek has Family Days. You have the Sturgeon Run in the spring up in Shiocton. So if you look at areas that would be an ideal, comprehensive, rock-solid tourism economic ecosystem, it's far and away Outagamie County in the Fox Valley. You know, over the last 16 minutes here, we have talked about so many different events. I'm not sure if there is another county, say for Dane in Milwaukee County, that has the breadth and depth of offerings that we have here in Outagamie County.
Well, I want to switch gears a bit here, Tom, and talk about funding, state funding, shared revenue. What is your reaction to the deal struck between Governor Tony Evers and Republican leaders in the legislature that would provide nearly every local government at least 20% more funding, for shared revenue?
Right. And the governor really came through for us on this. Outagamie County has seen about a 90% increase. So that's about $1.4 million. And that doubles the amount that we're able to raise in local tax revenue each year. So that's going to have a huge effect here. There was another version that the governor's pushing that was a bigger number. Of course, that would have been better. But given the kind of money that's coming in, that's going to go a long way in providing these basic services that the county does. I have about 30 different departments, everything from an international airport, public health, human services, parks, highway, and so forth. And what's important to that is that this money goes to basic investments in our community that help us have a thriving economy, a safe community, a healthy community. And that's also what you need. You can have all of these festivals, all these championships, I'm a PAC, but if you do not have a strong, growing, thriving community, it's not going to work out. No one is going to want to come to a community that is not known to be safe, healthy, having the basic infrastructure in order to come and enjoy. So
how
I'm
do
glad
you
brought that up, Kate.
How do you feel about the limits on what the shared revenue dollars can be used for? I mean, you talk about basic investments. These dollars, though, are not unrestricted. They need to go to these very specific things.
Right. And so in this case, you're talking about money that's going to be going toward public safety and infrastructure. In those two areas, that makes up about 40 or 50% of the kind of services that you offer at the county level. It doesn't cover everything, but, and I don't want to say it's better than nothing, but the point being is these additional investments go to improving quality of life. And foundationally, when it comes to tourism, you have to have strong, healthy, thriving communities. And that's where counties come into play. Do I wish that there weren't as many strings attached? Of course. But this is what we have to work with, and we'll do the best we can.
Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson with us as we talk with community leaders across the state on the most pressing issues. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Tom, as we're producing this series of conversations, mayors and county executives like yourself are raising concerns about affordable housing and water quality, workforce shortages, and a bunch of other issues. What are your county's biggest challenges?
I think our county is not unique in terms of the challenges that we are facing. You mentioned water quality. We had here one of the largest chemical cleanups, not just in the country, but around the world from 1996 to last year with the PCB cleanup in the Fox River. Mm-hmm. That extended from the mouth of Winnebago County or of the Fox River into Winnebago, into Lake Winnebago, all the way up to Green Bay. So this is something that we have dealt with, that we have struggled with for quite some time. And then you have these other areas too, that we're really no different than other communities around the state. And hopefully the additional money that's going to be coming from the state will help us address some of those concerns.
As you mentioned, paper mills, they dominate manufacturing in your region. How do you work with mills on their environmental impacts? I mean, how do you grow Paper Valley, as it's called, but really keep your natural resources protected?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, too. It hasn't been until recent history that we have improved the environmental track record from the mills. But going back 30 or 40 years, things are completely different. The operations that they run are very sustainable. They are able to have a clean process so that there isn't the kind of pollution going to the river that it was once upon a time. Obviously, in the 40s and 50s and the turn of the century, there wasn't an EPA, and so there was a lot of unregulated activity that poisoned the river, and we're still dealing with that today. So you're exactly right. When you have a strong manufacturing base, and this is the part of the world that has the highest concentration of paper mills and plants in the world, this is going to figure into safety and public health concerns.
Very quickly here, municipalities around Wisconsin are struggling with PFAS contamination and groundwater. What is Outagamie County's approach here to dealing with forever chemicals?
It's a multifaceted approach because we have smaller communities, mid-sized communities, larger communities. We also have the airport. And so airports around the state have been very much involved with PFAS contamination. There really is anything that stands out as far as our strategies go relative to other cities and counties. So a lot of this, we're waiting on support from Madison, direction in how we can approach this.
So right now you're really waiting for some more state direction, perhaps DNR
yes.
direction before you take
yes,
your
exactly.
next steps as a county.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Of course. Great to be on.
Tom Nelson is Outagamie County Executive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. A social media post questions the viability of a library. Area residents speak up about how their library touches their lives, and we dig into what transpired at Menominee Falls Public Library and how it moves forward as the village trustees tell the local Express News there's no discussion of closing it. Join in, call in with a question, comments about library issues, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Ian Dickman is a former board member of the Menominee Falls Public Library. Ian, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And Andrew Gus is here, co-leader of Grassroots of Menominee Falls Area. That's a group seeking to stop future cuts or closure of the library. Andy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Yes, Andy, let's start with you. You and others in Menominee Falls are really concerned the library is under threat of budget cuts or closing. Take us into those concerns. What are they?
Sure. So some concerns that we do have about the library is the plan to really defund the public library is deeply concerning to all the residents of Menominee Falls. And what we see is cutting library funding would have really a direct impact on the quality and accessibility of services, programs, limiting educational opportunity for children, teens, and adults throughout. And we're also really concerned that it could result in reduced access to books, technology, research materials, and other resources that residents rely on for personal and professional growth. We heard of a lot of that last week, Monday, at the village board meeting where people use the library for all sorts of different things that I wasn't even aware of. We had one village resident that had used the library for their college application to Harvard when their internet was out. Well, guess what? They're going to Harvard. So that's what some of our concerns are the plan here to really defund or make budget cuts to our public library.
Andy, has the library been underfunded, or has it had budget pressures like this before?
I would say yes. Last year in November 2022, there was a village board meeting in regards to the library budget, and we had a village board trustee, Steve Taggart, had first asked for $300,000 to be removed from the library. And he wanted it to be moved anywhere but to go to the library. So at this point, yes, we've already seen some budget cuts being made. And this budget cut here, without the money that was allotted in the budget, they couldn't move forward with the children's area, unfortunately.
Ian, you are among the board members who had their reappointments rejected. Your term ended at the beginning of June. Why do you think your reappointment was rejected?
That's a good question. It's one that was never directly expressed to me from Village Board. When the public vote came up, it was a 1-6 vote with zero discussion. I've read some comments that various community members have received from trustees. Sometimes it's been tied back to how we handled COVID, the closures, the stay at home
pandemic,
that type
shutdown
of things.
Okay,
exactly, which is interesting to me, because as long as I was a board member of the library, we were functioning. People were checking out books. Online services were being provided. We were never a closed library during the time, of the pandemic, the main part of the pandemic. So the actual stay at home order, for example, when the library was entirely shut down, occurred before I was even on the library board. Hmm. My term started in September 2020. So that was months after. So it's been a really mixed bag of messages and nothing, concrete directly to me. I suspect they've got their own, the village board has their own handpicked replacements that they just want to put in the seat and, potentially manage these budget cuts that, we're so concerned about.
how much control does the library board have over the operations of the library and how it's funded?
Yeah, so when it comes to the actual funding, we don't really have much control at all. We propose our budget. So, you know, we build our case as far as what we need and work with Village Hall to show what kind of funds we need to operate to you know, pay our staff, buy our materials, meet the county standards, which is a big deal. The Menai Falls Library needs to meet county standards or else we fall in jeopardy of having to pay, the village has to pay a county tax, basically as if we don't have a library. So that's something that we as a board are very focused on, is making sure that, you know, we don't want to just be the minimum to start with. We obviously want to excel. We want to provide the best library that we possibly can, but we have to meet those minimums. And with budget cuts, that becomes a huge concern because Menai Falls is a growing community. It's a fantastic community. We have a lot of families moving to the area. And as our population increases, we, to meet these county standards, we have to buy more books, for example. We have to make sure that we have certain hours for the library program. So if we don't have these things, then we're going to miss the minimum. And then Menai Falls is in jeopardy of a substantial tax since we will no longer be exempt from the county library tax.
Talking with former Menominee Falls Library Board member Ian Dickman there and Andy Guss with us, co-leader of Grassroots of Menominee Falls Area. You can join in with your questions and comments about library operations. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. So, Andy, last week during a village board meeting, dozens of people, they come out to support the library, and together residents spoke for nearly an hour. Why is the library meaningful to you?
I think the library is really meaningful for me is because of all of the long-term benefits that it has for the community. Well, and Ian hinted on it well, a well-funded library is going to be able to attract, you know, new residents. It supports local businesses. It enhances property values. But at the end of the day, it's about seeing all of the community in one place. I like going to the library. I don't do a ton of book rent. I don't use it for books. I use it for more of a research purpose. But I like going there just to see the cultural fabric of the community there. And that's what's really important to me. And that's why I find the library and I want to make sure that everyone has equal access to, you know, information, technology, and resources that everybody can get.
Ian, can you, I guess, draw us closer to this library that is set in a village? Who are its patrons? About how far do people travel to visit this local library? And you say it's a growing community.
Yeah, I believe I just read the number there today. We have 16,000 library card members, holders at the moment, which is a substantial amount of people. We're every month we are setting, you know, new highs as far as how many new library cards we're registering. It's fantastic. You know, obviously our core users are the Menai Falls residents, but that's not limited to that. With the Bridges library system here in Waukesha County, you can hop from library to library. You can check out books from our library if your library doesn't have that. You know, we do serve a small amount of people from even places like Milwaukee. They can sign up. There's additional fees from that, but, you know, we do serve part of even a slight sliver of Milwaukee for those who, you know, need to come to our library. So it's predominantly Menai Falls, but is, you know, that area outside of just the residents here.
There's an overlap. Andy, you know, libraries across the nation are under scrutiny over the books that they are putting on shelves, books with characters who are people of color, members of the LGBTQ plus community. They're facing pressure. Is book banning a concern in Menominee Falls?
Absolutely, it's a concern. We've already gone through some book banning and some new book policies with our school board the past year, where we have a brand new policy in place on the school board. And when we spoke at the library board meeting with Village Trustee Brad Juber, he had mentioned, and that was on May 17th, he had mentioned that there would be book reviews coming from the community that were too apprehensive to submit reviews. So we are expecting book reviews or book bans to start coming locally and affecting us really here at the next meeting.
What books might the library consider banning? Do you know?
I don't know the entire list. I do know that there is a list that different groups have been pushing, you know, a list of 100 books here, and lists of different 100 books here, different categories, like you mentioned. And so that's what we're really concerned about. We'll be looking, you know, once these concerns or if there's book bans coming up, my organization will be looking into that just to make sure that to see what books are looking to be removed.
Ian, I'm going to reference here some news. Our neighbor Illinois just became the first state to prohibit book banning. The governor there signed the bill into law yesterday. Should Wisconsin follow suit?
Absolutely. That put a smile on my face when I woke up this morning and I read the news and I saw that they passed that. You know, the Mount Ida Falls Public Library currently, as you know, our policy state stands, support the American Library Association's Library Bill of Rights, which very much they're using in that bill, in Illinois' bill. And I agree. I think public libraries are for the public. They're very much based around the First Amendment, freedom of speech, and, you know, sharing knowledge. And we understand there are items that some people, for political reasons, you know, personal reasons, may not agree with, but they don't have to check those books out either. But we want to make sure that everything is accessible for anybody who wants to come and, you know, read those books or read those materials or attend programs.
Ian Dickman is a former board member of the Menominee Falls Public Library. Andy Gus with us, co-leader of a Menominee Falls group seeking to prevent library budget cuts or the library's closure. You can join in at any point about libraries. Call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Public libraries across the country and here in Wisconsin under increasing scrutiny with book challenges, funding pressures. Call in with your questions, your thoughts about the role of libraries, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ian Dickman is a former board member of the Menominee Falls Public Library, and Andy Gus is a co-leader of a Menominee Falls group seeking to prevent library budget cuts or the library's closure. Andy, Menominee Falls Village board members and village leaders, including the manager, Mark Fitzgerald, told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that there is no plan to close the library. Do their comments ease your concerns at all?
Great question, but the answer is no. I think here with what we were able to uncover with the open records requests, I believe we brought attention to something that they weren't ready to bring out, or they were trying to hide from the community. So their comments their email comments to community members, as well as public comments to like the Journal Sentinel, I believe is more of a, we should wait and see until November when the budget comes and see if they're going to really back up what they say.
Ian, how do you digest the reaction?
It's concerning. It's also not entirely new. We've had trustees, specifically Trustee Taggart, Trustee Tata, have indicated the desire to make budget cuts dating back now probably till 2020 or 2021. So the last 2 years, we already covered earlier, they did reduce our budget last budget year in November by, $250,000. So they've indicated that they think we're overfunded, which is really a shame, because like I said, we think we produce an amazing library that the public obviously loves. The response to the last village board meeting was phenomenal.
What happens?
So I think, go ahead. Sorry.
What happens when a library budget is cut? Like, what is on the front lines of being reduced or eliminated when you do get a budget cut?
Yep. So obviously, you're going to start cutting peripheral things, programs, children's programs, adult programs. Those take resources from our staffs. The hours of the library probably are the first thing that's going to be cut back. There's only so many hours that they can cut without, again, going below the minimum threshold. But you would lose hours, staff. We have a large building that we need to staff. We have to keep people on different floors. You always want to have somebody in the children's department, for example, so that becomes a concern. And then materials. Books, with inflation, books are not cheaper today than they were yesterday. So we have to continue to buy materials. And if we don't have the funds to buy the materials, either we're going to end up with fewer materials, and again, risk not hitting our thresholds, or you're going to have worse books, a worse collection of books in the library. So those are kind of the primary things that I expect would have to be cut.
Let's bring on a call now. Kevin in Janesville. Kevin, hi. What is your comment?
Hi. My wife and I absolutely love our local library. And as we do our state tourism tour, we make it a point to visit whatever town's library we happen to be in. As we're looking for a place to retire later on, that is going to be a huge factor of where we decide to settle down. And as far as book banning is concerned, people, you have the right to not read it, but you don't have the right to tell me I can't.
Kevin, thanks so much for calling in. It's interesting there how Andy, Kevin saying that, they check out libraries as they tour around the state, and it will have an impact on where they sit down in retirement. What do you make of that?
As I mentioned earlier, the library has a ton of long-term benefits. And as I mentioned, the well-funded library is going to attract new residents like Kevin. It's going to enhance our property values as people come in. And I think it's great that that individuals like Kevin can, visit and really determine where they live based on the community resources. And I see the library as kind of a mecca of the village. It's a great place, as I mentioned, to come together, whether it's for book club or some different programs, or just maybe your group is meeting there. I think the long-term benefits of a library outweigh any of the budget cuts.
We have Andy Gus there, co-leader of Grassroots of Menominee Falls Area, and former Menominee Falls Library board member Ian Dickman. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ian, I'm wondering, as people hear a conversation focused on one library, Menominee Falls, what should they take away in terms of the questions we should be asking about our own public libraries in our own communities?
I think we need to, recognize that they're not necessarily a given. It's easy to take for granted that we have this amazing library. It's been here. I've lived in Menominee Falls over 17 years, and it's always been this amazing library that we've had. But just because it's fantastic today doesn't mean it's going to continue that way. It's something you have to stay on top of. It requires the funding. It requires a strong leadership through both the library board as well as the director. And that's how you get amazing things like the various programs that we do put on, the new tween space that we are building out for those kids in between children's age and teens. Or, we have a maker space, the Forge. These things don't happen by accident. They require planning. They require funding. And I think they are fantastic for the community because, like our caller said, like Andy said, these are things that people look for when moving to a community. These are things that raise property values. They're really important to the community.
Andy, you know, how has the situation changed the dynamic of the Menominee Falls community as the library situation goes on?
I think what it really comes down to is community engagement. My organization has been really committed to mobilizing the community and raising awareness about the potential consequences of budget cuts. We saw a direct result of a simple email and social media post last week where we had a packed room at the village board meeting. So I think people love I was very surprised. I told a lot of my friends I was very surprised about the reaction that we did receive. And I was very excited. And I mean, I left Monday very excited about the future of Menominee Falls, that people were there to care and they were there to advocate for the library's preservation.
Ian, just a few seconds here left, but what are you watching for next with the Menominee Falls Public Library?
Yep. Two things that we've kind of covered. Book bans. I expect some requests to be discussed rather shortly. And then the second will be whether the village board approves funding the minimum amount of the library that they are required to. And then ultimately the November budget, which is where they need to fund, beyond the minimum, what we actually need for the library to meet its goals and continue to operate.
Ian and Andy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Ian Dickman is a former board member of the Menominee Falls Library. Andy Gus, co-leader of Grassroots of Menominee Falls Area, group seeking to stop future cuts or closure of the library. You can check out our program page to find more conversations from the morning show. Visit WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.